Hey, wonderfuls, welcome to episode 667 of the JV Club, quarantine style. I hope you are all doing well. I hope you're still doing well, even after you had to listen to that very weird voice I just did. I am so excited to welcome you into this episode with Renee Colvert from the delightful and charming podcast, Can I Pet Your Dog? She is, of course, also mother to the very famous tugboat of social media fame. I have been receiving some wonderful, wonderful, wonderful check-ins with many of you, and it has been so lovely to have that contact and hear how everyone's doing from far reaches of the world. It's been filling me with so much joy, and I just love feeling connected to a community. So keep them coming if you want. If not, please continue to enjoy the podcast. Know that I am sending a lot of virtual hugs out there. Definitely COVID-19 free hugs. No worries on that count. Okay, guys, thinking about you. Enjoy the episode. I really am a saint. I'm just a saint.
But you are, because I do think, like, on the one hand, like, technical things are frustrating and people have various different skill sets and knowledge with it. But you were very kind to be like, yes, we together equally are struggling with that was not the case. Had it figured out the whole time.
This is the thing. I have so recently been on the other side, not, you know, as pertains to my particular podcast, but I have been the you as recently as like 2 days ago, because, you know, I'm now doing a bunch of VO stuff that I would normally go into a studio to do or whatever as well. And it turns out that the needs of like an audio engineer for like cartoon voiceover are different than an audiobook narration. Like, what their expectation of what the sound quality is going to be is different than the podcasting quality. Like, it's everyone's got their own way they like to do things. And so I have had, I think all of us, I just feel like we're all in this place that we're having to sort of figure out stuff that we didn't need to know before. We just happen not to know before. And so I think that, you know, with everybody kind of being quarantined, it feels like, has there ever been a better time to just be super patient with not just other people but with ourselves, for going, okay, well, this is going to be a thing I need to figure out, and there's gonna be a learning curve.
What? Now, I gotta agree with you in theory. In theory, I couldn't agree with you more.
We're in a fight. This is our first fight.
I can't believe it, but I believe in us. I think we're going to overcome. I think some people are able to practice it better than others in a far less severe scenario than that when it comes to, like, text messaging to a pal. So you'll send a text and maybe the lag time's a little bit longer than it would be, just because people are dealing with various things. So the right thing to think there is, you know what? You get back to me when you get back to me. Imagine being upset with somebody in this day and age. Imagine, right? Because we're all dealing with it. And yeah, I tell you what, boy, has the rage gone through the roof. I was like, what are you doing? What could you possibly be doing that you can't answer that text right now? Which is ridiculous.
That's
so
not
grace
real.
Is where we should be. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not, there's that, that is a weird, I was talking about this with someone before. I don't remember if it was on a podcast or if it was in real life, but also everything's real life.
Sure.
Unless I did it in a dream. That's really tricky because, yeah, that's exactly what's going on. Lots of people are actually busier for whatever reason. Like, people are maybe having to scramble more, or God help you if you have a kid, you know, and you're homeschool. Like, the assumption that anyone is, and some people are, like, some people for sure are sitting around. Whatever that they do is, they cannot do from home. And so they are, like, left with their thoughts of,
oh my God, when am I going to get to go back to work? And right. that person could understandably assume that when they text someone else, that that other person also would be like, oh, thank God you texted me. I'm going out of my mind. This is hard. This is crazy. Or, you know, I'm bored or whatever.
Right.
But then, you know, everybody's level of, and also just like, you know, some it's okay if you need to just not respond to anything for an hour or a day or whatever. This is, we're going through something extraordinary. And already, if you're a person who doesn't like to feel tied to your technology,
right?
You know, this is a time where it's understandable if someone's like, I needed to not be near my phone for 3 hours because I was obsessively looking at the news mm-hmm. or whatever, you know.
Couldn't agree more, and need to be very clear about the double standard that so many texts have come in that I'm just like, ooh, baby, I can't right now. That's right. too much work to respond.
Right.
And so I guess just going back to, like, in theory, grace, compassion, love is the only way we should operate. But I'm finding it very curious to look at myself and be like, well, I'm doing that 80% of the time. And the other 20% of the time, I'm just being a maniac over here for no good reason.
But you do. But it is. I don't know. Now the fight is I'm going to have to win this. And the person who's going to have to win is the person who is arguing in your favor as a good person. So this is fun for me because, like, I wear the white hat in the situation because
I'm not letting
you get away with shitting on yourself.
Fair.
But also, this is extraordinarily stressful, and it doesn't feel like it should be for many of us, because in your mind it's like, well, yeah, my job at this moment is being on the phone with someone I like very much, and I happen to be sitting on my couch, and I happen to still be in my pajamas, and I happen to have, like, a big blanket around me. So yeah. why would I be stressed about anything? Like, what if, how cush? But right. at the same time, right. you know, I know that if I look at my phone, I will be damaged for hours because I uh-huh. will invariably see something that totally breaks my heart.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's stressful. Knowing that it's right there, you know, is, and that, of course, you could always do that. There's always something horrible going on in the world. But let's be fair to ourselves. It's different when it's all around you and the whole world. It's not just
right.
somewhere far
right.
away. It's somewhere far away and somewhere up close. And
that
so
absolutely
I think just, yeah, that. Just actively avoiding stress is as exhausting as, you know, it's not as exhausting as processing the stress, but, like, it's not like we're all able to just go. And then I just pretended for a day that this was just, like, a fun vacation. Like,
yeah,
guess what? You're having to work really hard to right. tell yourself that. That's also work, because it isn't. You know,
you
so for you being snippy is also like, yeah, if that feels unrecognizable to you on some level, or even if it doesn't, and you just know that's how I am when I get stressed, that's right. all okay, because it all makes sense.
Yes. God, it's so true. It is a curious thing that none of this has really brought up anything new for me. It's all mm-hmm. just all the things that I was able to, you know, sort of push down because I had to go to work, or I had to tend to this, or I had to run that errand. Were all things that were sort of, like, hovering in the background, but, like, finding peace and zen and calming myself down is not a new thing that I need to yeah. be working on. It's yeah. just now it's right in front of my face because I got time to deal with it.
I mean, they're going to be writing about this time period forever.
Yeah.
There will be so many, I mean, ideally there will be, like, positive studies that come out of this that show, you know, well, gosh, we were all able to somehow, you know, look, was this, could we sustain this? Could the economy sustain this? Of course not long term, but
right.
have we learned that X, Y, and Z could be done to help carbon emissions, or, you know,
right.
all of these sort of things? Is it okay for a mom to be on maternity leave and work from home and be very effective and
mm-hmm.
be working, you know, 20 hours a week? And no one doubts whether or not she's able to put that time in. Like, there's going to be so much stuff like that. And I mean, please, like, sociologists, psychologists, people are going to be having a field day with this time period forever, because
yes.
it's such a human experiment.
It really is, to the point where I'm sure some people have been able to kind of wrap their head around it, but I'm not there yet. Right now, it's just a curious wonder of what will this look like. The furthest I've gotten is movies down the road. If we do just sort of an establishing shot of people with masks on, you'll know that took place in 2020. That's when this movie takes place. And we won't have to talk about it much more than that of, oh, sure. I know when this movie is being.
First of all, I guess let's assume that you've taken on the now everyone has to wear masks all the time outside.
Yes.
If we're walking our dogs, for example, assuming you've adopted that, how much are you seeing people following that versus not following that? In terms of this curve of like people kind of coming around to each new step of security or each new step of you know, protection.
Right. You know, I feel that my little neighborhood is doing a good job of pertaining to it.
Nice.
A lot of people have kind of gone with the, I call them turtle furs, but I think there's probably a better name for it. It's like a turtleneck of a shirt, but that's the only part of it that I would use for skiing. So
yes,
you just kind of,
yes.
You can pull it up. Yes.
And you call it what, turtle fur?
A turtle fur.
I don't think that's
like
what
that.
They're called.
I like that.
I hope that's what they're called. You're probably right.
Yeah. And that's currently what I'm using to just put it up there. And it weirdly is creating happy nostalgia for me because I'm like, oh, we're just going skiing. That's it. We're just enjoying
Very
a bit
nice.
Of a snow day over here. But yeah, I think the worst that I've seen is pull up your mask when people get close. But for the most part, I think, at least in this little neighborhood, everybody's doing a good job of adhering to the rules.
Nice.
How about for you? What's it looking like in your neck of the woods?
Well, for one thing, I don't know if you ever go up to Griffith Park, but I live right near there. And so that's a common place that we go to hike or to take the dogs or ride
right.
bikes or whatever. And it's been very interesting to see and to kind of absorb the frustration and try to, again, have that kind of compassion for no one has a plan for any of this. No one knows what's effective. No one knows how to prevent whatever.
Right.
But like the fact that what I'm struggling with, and I totally understand that that the impetus for, you know, the local government is like, how many people, like how much can we police a large area? Versus like if we just kind of make it simple and just close everything, then
right.
that feels like there's less chance of X, Y, and Z happening. So I get
yeah.
it. There are miles and miles of trails in Griffith Park. It is like the largest municipal park. Like it exceeds Central Park in terms of like a city park that's not, you know, a state park in terms of its size. And it is massive. And they have closed all of those trails, but they have left certain picnicking areas open, certain like quote unquote wide open spaces.
Okay.
But the majority of it is closed, and then they allow people to walk. They've closed the road going up to the observatory. The roads going up, basically all the roads to traffic within
okay.
the perimeter of the park.
Right.
And you can now walk on the road and on the road only. There's like caution tape keeping you off of any of the paths.
Okay.
So there's this weird. So also, all the people that would have been in the park regularly, just hiking on a path, never encountering anyone else, are
yeah,
now
right.
all on this weird zombie pilgrimage.
Sort of,
dude,
right.
it is so weird. It's like these
yeah.
people just sort of walking with masks on, walking up a hill. It's the most apocalyptic. It's actually, it's funny, but it's also like kind of depressing.
Right.
All And
yeah.
they're all close to each other. I mean, yes, they're 6 feet apart. But
mm-hmm.
they're all close to each other in the sense of like where you might be 20 feet apart from someone who's up the trail from you. Now you're the maximum or the minimum amount of distance away
right.
from each other because
exactly
you're all
6 feet.
Being told like cattle, this is where you get to walk. So
oh boy.
It's
yeah.
those kinds of moments where you kind of go like, I wish that there were another way because this feels like it's not helping.
Especially when you see that's the result of it. Because they definitely...
Because they're just going to close down those roads. Do you know what I mean? Like what
yeah.
they'll do is they'll look at that
down.
And go, wait a minute, these people are too close together. And then
yeah.
we have no access to the park, which, by the way, is great for the animals. So I appreciate that and I respect that and like
that. Yes.
Go for it. Have some fun, P22. But
guns, that's
right.
the mountain lion that lives in Griffith Park.
But, you know... it just, again, it's like, I just don't, it's hard.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to be the one making the decisions, I don't think, but.
Same. I kind of feel the same way about, you know, our governors as I do about being a parent of, like, how do you decide? Because when the privileges are abused, probably right. makes sense. We got to take away that privilege. But at the right. same time, did that help or did that hurt? Because, you know, we've learned that shame doesn't produce the result that we want. Right. But at the same time, trusting you didn't work either. So... Yeah, I don't know. I know I don't like it,
yeah.
But I also don't have a better solution for it.
Yeah, I know.
It's well, tough.
We're all yeah. learning.
Doing we're okay. How are you learning. Today, like in this hour? How's mm-hmm. how's it been for you?
Today, I'm good. Okay. I have had some trouble sleeping the last couple of nights, and so I did... Not like I woke up at 6:30 and I was like, yep, nope, I'm definitely awake, even though I okay. went to bed at, you know, 12:30 or whatever. And yeah. I'm sure people out there are like, 6 hours is great. That's definitely not true for me. No, no. And so is that not true for you either?
No, it is. I recently was gifted a Fitbit and I was like, well, why not? We'll go ahead and put that on and that will sort sure. of watch your sleep patterns for you.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I sleep plenty. I sure don't. I would say between 6 and 7 is where I land. Now, I let this dog of mine sleep in the bed. So I feel like that has a lot to do with it because he's like, well, I'm up. So,
right.
It'd be curious to see what my patterns would be without a dog who decides 6:30 is the time to get up.
Sure.
But, yeah, I think I'm a 6 to 7 hour sleeper. What's norm for you?
Do you feel fatigued, though, or do you just kind of feel normal?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Very sleepy. Yeah. No, I should sleep more, Janet. I'm very tired and cranky. We covered this.
Yeah, I don't. I think I get too emotionally fraught if I'm repeatedly fatigued. I think. I mean, basically, what we're getting at is like I'm a child. I'm a child who doesn't take naps, so I'm the worst kind of child.
Right,
who is like emotionally fragile and thinks everyone's trying to hurt her feelings when she doesn't have enough sleep. So you know, and these are all these are the times when you know we're supposed to like. You know, obviously being exercising as much self-care as possible. So right. I'm hoping that this is not a long-term trend. But if you're sleeping well enough, but for being awakened by your dog, that might be different than like tossing and turning or, you know.
Yeah. No, just in general, I'm stress has never manifested itself in sleep for me. I think I would even, that's where I go to escape. I'm just mm-hmm. like, yeah, you know what? I'm just gonna not deal with this by sleeping.
Right.
So I don't think that that's where the stress is coming up. I think it's the dog thing, but I definitely agree that 8 hours is where it should be for everybody.
Seven. I mean, it's even seven. Sometimes I feel like I wake up naturally at 7, 7 and a half, and I'm like, oh, okay, I woke up with the. Were you a kid who could stand like morning classes and stuff? Like, were you, because I say that as a person who I look back on how I behaved about having to get up for school in the morning, especially high school, and I just, right. I shudder to think.
Yeah. Same. I have never, it's odd that I have never, ever been a morning person. I do much better in the evening, and yet I feel guilt and shame if I sleep in now as an adult. So in high school, I always did have morning classes. Feel like it was, we were usually up by 6:30 or 7, but never pleasantly. Always, right. always a nightmare. Always.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man. Sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks. Every week, myself and I'm Morgan Rhodes and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
There are times when I feel like I would have had a better relationship with school across the board if my classes just started at 9, you know?
Right.
Because, yeah, and now, God, thinking back on high school, was that an option? Could you have done a scoot? Or
I mean, no way. Yeah. Although we did go into this modular schedule on Tuesdays and Thursdays where I think we rotated out, like, there was some kind of thing where you would have three, instead of your six periods, you would have three periods for longer.
Right.
And then maybe, so yeah, maybe Tuesday you would have like your first, third, and fifth period only for an hour and a half, an hour 45 or something. And then then on Thursday, maybe you would have two, four, and six. Okay. And that I think that did start later. And I do feel like I felt like I was settling into some, like on those days, I was like, I can do this.
Right. Yes.
Did you have that? Yeah. Did you have a modular schedule like that?
We had module in junior high. And in high school, we had our regular like 45-minute classes, seven periods. And then
Seven periods?
A good amount.
Where'd you grow up?
At Colorado Springs, which is like an hour south of Denver.
Yeah. Are you a Colorado person?
I do. Yeah. I've been all through Colorado. My dad, we won't go into this because this is your time, but my dad writes books about ghost towns and mining camps and stuff. So he has a book called Colorado's Best Ghost Towns. And I went with him for much of that research. So I know like a lot of the little mining towns and stuff. So yeah, definitely been to Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna have to get that book because growing up, I absolutely hated it. Couldn't get out of there fast enough. Yeah. What a pitiful small town we were. And then obviously once I got myself to a coast, now going back, it feels like a sanctuary and it's so great and I love it so much. And all the things that I couldn't be bothered to learn in high school, I'm now like, well, I should go back and learn that again.
I know. But I
vaguely remember ghost towns and thinking, oh, well, I guess that's kind of cool. But it couldn't be bothered to learn or retain any of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's not something I would have sought out, I'm sure. I loved my dad and like we had a great relationship. So going on road trips with him, you know, sort of it's all wrapped up in like positive road trip memories. So, of course, I have this like real fondness and interest in it. But again, it's, you know, if it had been a parent that I thought was like, you know, if it was something where I was having issues with my dad, I'm sure I would think ghost towns were dumb. You know, and like yes, if he had no relationship to them at all, neither would I have had. So, but yeah, Colorado Springs is not to be confused with like, is it Colorado City like in Arizona? Like some of the best Mormon spinoffs with the most sister wives and just the best abuse. Yes. Sarcasm.
Everybody heard it. Everybody knows it.
Have been tied to the Four Corner States. And of course, I'm from Arizona. So I feel like always a slight wincing kinship sometimes with people who are from smaller towns in some of those areas, because I feel like there's a lot of like weird, like, sects that break off in those areas.
Yes, I think Colorado Springs is more it's for the beauty. We have Garden of the Gods, we have the Air Force Academy, and then here's where it gets weird is that we have NORAD and and then Focus on the Family. So very military, very religion that will just make your heart hurt.
Right.
Type of thing. Right. Oh no. Why would you do that?
I can tell you, I'm not sure if I know what Focus on the Family is.
You know what's interesting is that I don't either. I know enough that they're obviously anti-abortion and a few other like real religious thing. Don't love anyone who isn't heterosexual. And I think those were the two things I needed to hear. Be like, oh, you're horrible. You're quite bad. I simply don't need to know anymore. But yeah, I think, you know, are so influential that they, you know, occasionally get laws passed that are harmful. So it's a bit rough there.
Yeah. Well, do you have siblings?
I do. Yes. I have a younger brother by 5 years. And he, what's nice is that my entire family is still in Colorado Springs. So my mom and dad are still there. My brother went to school in San Diego but moved back to Colorado Springs. So now for the holidays, it's just a one-stop shop. I get to see everybody all at once.
Yeah, no doubt. Is it pleasant in the Christmas time? That seems like I would love going to Colorado for Christmas if you can.
Yes.
If you can get past the snow, like drifts and.
Yeah. Weirdly, that's my beef with it, is that it often doesn't snow when I go home. And I was like, what are we doing? I ordered it.
Guys, come on.
I need it.
Come on. But yeah, no, it's really, it's nice. I don't have an affinity for Colorado Springs specifically, but I do love mountain towns and Colorado. So yeah. My family's really good about, just because Colorado Springs, they don't have a ton to offer, but they're good about letting me, you know, if I go home in the summer, we get to go camping, or if we're home at winter, then we'll do some sort of snow activity where there is snow.
Right.
So it's nice. Yeah.
And your parents all, they stay together, so they...
Yeah, yeah. Still, everybody's still together. Everyone in my family, including me, got married at 19. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
And with the exception of me, is still together.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? I know.
Do you feel like you were... when you did it, was there a sense now looking back that there was sort of this expectation of like, well, that's when successful marriages start. So why wouldn't I get married?
Certainly. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. And what was interesting is the sort of the dichotomy of every part of my being. Obviously, he was incredible, but we were high school sweethearts. So who's to say who you should be with? But every part of me was just like, no. What have we done? But... because that was sort of the norm, I was like, just because every part of me says no doesn't mean that's an indication why I shouldn't go through with this.
Mm.
And it turns out it was.
How quickly did you figure that out? How quickly did you go, okay, I should have, you know, not should have, because you do what you do.
Sure.
You know, but.
Yeah, we were together for 5 years total. So... for about 3 years of actual marriage. It was interesting that during the proposal, I was like, I can't. I'll tell him no tomorrow. And then that was just kind of the lingering thing up until we got married. And I was like, well, you know what? This isn't that bad. But then our courses kind of strayed in different directions. And ultimately, we were like, oh, this is kind of a bad idea. But yeah. that was a long answer to 5 years. It took 5 years for us to be like, what are we doing?
That's really something. I mean, I guess it's good that you guys didn't have kids. I mean, it's good. Again, yeah. What's good and what's bad, but.
Yeah. Well, and then there's also the thing of like, I've never, ever wanted kids ever. Yeah. And so I think, you know, like now I would know if I were to get in a relationship, that would be like one of the first things you kind of gab about.
Right.
But then it was just sort of this weird, naive thing that you think when you're 18, you're like, hey, it'll work it out. I'll change my mind. He'll change his mind. Something will change.
Sure.
In
fairness, that could have happened because you were so young. You could, you know, potentially evolve all different kinds of points of view about stuff like that as you matured and your brain continued to finish becoming
to
you.
Fully develop, yes. Exactly. It is, I guess, thank you for that, that it isn't the craziest thing in the world to think, oh, we'll figure this out down the road. But
yeah.
If I were to give advice going forward, I'd be like, if you're very opposing on that particular topic, you may want to do another circle back to see if this is the thing that you should be doing.
For sure. Was there anybody else in your world who kind of expressed a sense of like, I mean, just, you don't have to, or did everyone else seem like 19's good? Let's do this. This is great.
Yeah, I could tell in my parents' eyes that they were just like, oh, because I'm the first kid that they have and wasn't thriving at the time, because we got engaged between our freshman and sophomore year. And I wouldn't think that it was wrong for me to be to say that, like everyone else when you're 19, was going through a bit of an eating situation. And so I think everybody could observe how much weight I gained that freshman year, but nobody was really talking about it. So it was just sort of this undercurrent thing. And I was also being a monster to my entire family just because I wasn't properly processing the things that I was dealing with.
Right.
So there was sort of an undercurrent of, okay, but the sort of the thing that you should do is to celebrate it. So as far as words are concerned, everybody was happy and was saying congratulations. But I think the feeling was just like, I don't know if this is the best move for everyone right now.
Yeah. It's amazing what we all can just, I mean, it's such a microscopic version of something horrible, like, you know, things that
everybody, when you sort of just go like, I'll go along with this, you know, on a grand scale, when whole countries do that with things. But like, it really is kind of amazing, this like, weird social compacts that we make for better or for worse, where it is like, well, I wasn't going to say anything. I mean, it was your decision. I felt like I needed to, you know, right. It's like this sort of, how did we all know? Well, okay, we guess we all just sort of went ahead with this, you know?
Yeah. And I think it is a weird sense of doubt that everybody feels of just like, well, I think this is wrong, but I don't trust myself and know that it is. So I'll just say yes because I don't want to be wrong down the road.
Right.
Type of a protection thing. And weirdly, even within families, I think there is still a politeness that is there. Because if I bring this up, then that's just going to be a whole thing that we're going to have to discuss. So it's just easier to be polite.
Right. Right. Were you a good student? Or were you just too focused on being, no, like being a girlfriend? I'm totally kidding.
Right.
No, that's fair. Totally. That's very
focus
fair.
On the family. Focus on the family.
how was your school? Was it, you said you couldn't wait to get out of there. So was there a sense of like, you know, I'm getting as good as I can get here, but it's not enough? Or at that point with something like school, your education, did it feel like this is okay, this is good?
Yeah, no, the first one. I was, I'm sure like every single guest you've had on, was a huge musical theater kid. But I, weirdly, my grandpa died when I was 10. I didn't cry at all when that happened. And right around that time, I dived into musical theater in a way that was obsessive to the point of, oh, you love that because that's a place where you get to express emotion. And that like extreme scenario. You get to scream and cry, and it's fine because it's art. Was sort of
I
the
love
way
that, like, I would say the majority of things when I think of musical theater are not screaming and crying.
Mm-hmm. True.
You're like, that's we a did a production point. Of Mary Poppins. Of course, I was able to scream and cry.
Very lovely, very lovely. Yes,
but in fairness, something like Les Mis or some of the sort of like more emotionally. Expressive and like heartbreaking and tragedy and all of that kind of stuff too. But
yes, exactly. So Rent was the big thing when I was in high school,
well,
and that's going to toss you some extreme emotions. So I think diving into that was really kind of, I didn't know it at the time, but was therapeutic with all these feelings that I hadn't properly processed. So obsessed with musical theater. We don't have a picture of me in high school not wearing a musical theater shirt. When I asked my mom, she's like, every single one, you're wearing something. So obsessed with theater up until my senior year. And then my senior year, I started to get a little rebellious and just was like, well, what if I didn't go to class? What if I just didn't? And I mastered my mom's handwriting. So I would write a little please excuse Renee as she doesn't want to come in note. Oh. And so I was good up until senior year. And then my second semester of senior year, I got real rebellious.
Do you feel like you had kind of banked enough goodwill that you were able to get away with it in a way that you wouldn't have if you had been like that longer?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a combination of I had this weird eating thing was kind of, you know, incorporating my entire personality, that I wasn't properly dealing with anything. So, and an eating disorder will make you nuts. So I think that was kind of compromising my behavior. And then I had already gotten into college. So in my mind, I was like, what are they going to do?
Sure.
You already said I could go. It's fine.
Sure. What, do you mind diving into the eating thing a little bit more?
No, not at all. And it's now, even in this like quarantine thing, I've dealt with it for so long that when it comes up, I'm just kind of like, oh, all right, that's just kind of who I am. But it's a sort of a binge purge type of a thing. But at the time, because I was a dancer, it felt insane and crazy. Mm-hmm. And the thing with that is that you're not going to be able to maintain weight. It's just going to jump all over the place. So right. I think it was the chasing of that kind of made me crazy.
Yeah, it's
I mean, we don't have to like unpack the differences from one type of like eating disorder, the way those things express themselves than others. But I think yo-yoing weight is feels so like and first of all, I've never had like a full-blown eating disorder that I would characterize as a full-blown eating disorder, although gosh, right. I've flirted with it most of my adult life.
I don't know any woman who hasn't, honestly. Yeah, I think everybody has varying
We come from a weird place where it's in front of us all the time, and it feels good, and it's, you know, and then it's also something that we're, you know, then you look around at anything in pop culture and you're like, wait, I don't know if I can watch that commercial for McDonald's and then also look like the girl who's in the show that I'm now watching after the commercial for McDonald's.
Yes, exactly.
Which also, like, not to say that it's all surface and it's always about just that, but that's a damn good way for it to manifest itself when you are a female, perhaps of a certain age, perhaps not, and of a certain like socioeconomic class, perhaps not. But but going back to what I was saying, like, anorexia is very specific. It is very, very dangerous. They're all dangerous, of course. They all are, you know, punishing of yourself in ways that are sort of heartbreaking. And when you're on the outside, you're like, what do I do to help you? How can I don't do that? Like, it's one of those things that I think causes people that care about you to kind of go, what do I do? Like, what do I do?
Yes.
Help me help you. But with anorexia, it's like, I just want to get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller.
Right.
If you're binging and purging, if you're yo-yoing, that is so terrifying on a different level, because if control is an important part of an eating disorder, the idea that you're seeing those wild shifts only makes you feel like crazier. It only makes you feel more afraid and to struggle harder to gain that control that you systematically are also giving away by having the disorder. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Yes, that actually better, because, you know, of course, you've gone through a ton of therapy and read a bunch on it and tried to do a bit of self-healing. And that's the best explanation I've heard of it. And it all stems from this death that I didn't deal with when I was 10. And then that gripping control of like, well, maybe I'll do this. And then, you know, the delicate balance of if you're addicted to something, if it's alcohol or it's drugs, then you can eliminate it completely. But you can't do that with food.
Yeah.
So then it's navigating how to do that. And with a family who definitely cares and wants to be there, but they can only help as much as, you know, they themselves have allowed themselves to deal with anything that isn't pleasant. Mm. Because, you know, my parents' generation is definitely we thrive and we're strong and we, you know, pick ourselves up by our bootstraps, and only recently has this like be vulnerable and share what you're going through has kind of been the norm. So it was tough, and everybody definitely did as much as they could given what they had at the time,
right,
to try to help and get it fixed. But I didn't want to talk about it, so it was tough for everybody that it was this thing going on that I refused to talk about.
Well, yeah, and it's so personal, and I mean, yeah, and part of that is, again, it's like part of it is having that secret, right, and having that thing that's like the center of your life, because, you know, it helps you not think about other things or whatever. I don't mean whatever like dismissively. Like, there could be any number of things that that allows you to sort of push away and not make the center and not make a thing that you have to, you know, deal with. But it's part of it is having that secret, and part of it is, you know, that being something that you're going through alone and that helps isolate you as you continue to sort of punish yourself on some level. And so the idea that like trotting it out there is going to feel like when you're still in it, the idea that talking about it is going to help at all feels like, what? No, this is
certainly not. No,
this is very personal. I need to just deal with this on my own. Like I've been doing and I've been doing great.
And I've got it all under control.
You know?
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Right. I got this, you guys.
It's fine. Yeah. I totally have this. Yes, exactly. That's it verbatim of what it was. But yeah, to go back to the question that for the most part, I was a very good student, and then it sort of started to, you know, unravel at the seams just my senior year.
Right.
And that I was very, very good and then got tired of being good.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
How much did your soon to be husband know about all of this? Like, were you with him enough that that was something that you had to sort of actively work to keep him from being a part of and dealing with?
Certainly. A lot, and as helpful as any 16-year-old boy can be about something like that. Like, just
that's a kind.
Right, exactly. But then, you know, meeting it with, well, I think you look good. And that makes sense if you're 16 years old and you're
sure,
a boy. That sure. That is the comfort with which you know that you can deliver. So I think that, like, I would open up a little bit, the comfort would be met with, I think you're good. And then I was just like, okay, well, that didn't quite get us anywhere. So then you close it back up again.
Sure, sure. What were some of the other, you mentioned Rent, were there other seminal musicals that you were able to kind of hurl yourself into in high school?
Oh, certainly the more dramatic, the better. I loved mm-hmm. Les Mis. I loved A Miss Saigon.
It sounds like your school was actively seeking out those musicals too, because, you know, some schools sure. really do stick to like just the sort of upbeat. The more sort of traditionally thought about that, those are just as traditional, so I don't know what I mean. But
yes, and to be fair, those are the ones that I personally were just like, let's just have this on repeat. But our show, we did West Side Story, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, Will Rogers Follies, and Guys and Dolls were okay. our shows that we actually did in high school.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah. Okay. So yeah, so you yourself were passionately. Listening to the other ones on a massive repeat. Did you ever like get to go see productions of the official productions of those?
Yeah.
Do they come through town and stuff?
We did. Yeah. So I would go to as many shows as I could that would go to town. And then our family, my dad occasionally would have a business trip in New York, so he'd take us with him so we could go see shows in New York, which was incredible. Yeah. I think I got to do that my junior and senior year, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And definitely it didn't curb the thought of, oh, I'd like to do this.
Sure.
Just made it so much worse.
Were you doing, you mentioned dance, were you doing like ballet or modern dance stuff in addition to the musical theater?
Yeah. So jazz, tap, and ballet. And it was kind of the norm for our little town. We had two rivaling dance schools, so you were part of one of them. Mm. And so my little group of friends, we would go to school and then you'd go to dance immediately afterwards.
Right. And is it the same, are they the same, is it the same teacher? Is it like, this is a class that teaches these three things? Or is it like, first you do this, and then you kind of move on and you go to this, or?
Yeah, so it was, each class was different, each teacher was different. So on a regular day, you would have jazz, and then tap, and then acrobatics, and then pom-pom, and then ballet. So it was a good amount of classes. I would say I would have three or four every day.
Pom-pom.
Yeah,
I just wanted to hear myself say pom-pom.
Yeah, let's just say it again. Just pom-pom. That's kind of fun.
What is pom-pom, does that incorporate more kind of moves that you would see in cheerleading? Or is it something I can't imagine?
Precisely it. It's okay. the dance element of cheerleading. So there's no cheering per se, but you could hold on to those pom-poms. And you get to jump around a little bit with like very basic lifts here and there.
Gotcha. And so jazz, tap, and ballet were sort of the ones that you.
Yes, I loved it. I wasn't naturally good at it, but I think that was my first example of 10,000 hours of like, well, if you just keep going, you're
right.
eventually going to get better at all of this. But I loved it so much.
I never, you know, all the classes, all the stuff I did like that was never extracurricular. It was all just whatever was offered through school, except for guitar.
Yeah.
No, that was still offered through school, technically. I mean, I continued doing it after it was a class for me in school.
Right.
But But dance was one of those things that I always did as, you know, an elective or as my PE substitute. But nobody ever really got into tap long enough for me to ever really get good at it or, just like have enough time to practice it. It always seemed like it was something that was dropped in as a like a by the way, like a couple of classes. They would be like, now we're going to show you some tap moves. And I loved them. And I always felt like, wait a minute, this is not that easy. Like, I'm not going to know how to do this by the end of, you know, two classes worth of this.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get just a little bit more in there. Now, did you like dance?
I did. I think I always, maybe this is in retrospect, but I do think I always kind of felt like a visitor.
Right.
You know, even though I did it like 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade. Possibly just through 10th grade, maybe 11th grade. But I never tell people, like I never talk. I don't think I really talk about it the way I talk about doing theater.
Right.
And I kind of felt like a visitor. Like I felt like I enjoyed it, but it didn't belong to me like it belonged to most of the other girls in the class. Is that, you know? Which, that made me a little insecure, but.
Makes sense. I also think it was a weird personality thing, and that I also didn't quite, though I was taking class constantly, I didn't quite fit in with the dancers, and then theater was kind of like these are my people that makes it a little bit easier.
Okay, so you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get you.
And then in terms of like other kind of cultural stuff that was going on for you, were you a big movie buff? Were you an avid reader? What other kind of stuff that did you kind of seek out? Or was it, it's by the way, also okay if it was like almost entirely musical theater?
It is my most embarrassing thing now, like an adult conversation to be like, oh, what were you into in high school? Like, what was your jam? What concerts did you go to?
Right.
It was just musical theater. And yeah. I think a tiny bit that was my beef with Colorado Springs is that there was this craving for culture of art or like movies that weren't mainstream movies. And the theater was the only thing that we had. So I was just like, all right, well, I'll just double down on that a bit.
Yeah.
But it was, mostly musical theater. And to the point where it does make it difficult when I'm trying to have an adult conversation with somebody that I was just like, well, you want to talk more about musicals? Because that's what it was.
You're definitely not alone.
It's gotten better since then, but yeah.
You're definitely not alone in that. I wasn't sure if when you got a little rebellious and started skipping school, if that also reflected like some sort of cultural shift for you where it was like,
right.
And then I got into rebellious type stuff.
Yes. It, you know what's interesting is that it dipped just a bit into comedy via the Rosie O'Donnell show, which I got into because, and we should laugh at that. We should make fun of that.
It just wasn't what I was expecting.
Right.
That's all.
Because she would have musicals on her show.
Sure.
But then it was at the time that was my experience with comedy, and I love that. So then I would start to like make little jokes in ballet or just not go to school at all, or weirdly stole a street sign. Was the street sign Broadway? Of course it was, but I stole it.
That counts.
Wow. Yeah.
What did you do with it?
I hung it up in my room immediately.
Were your parents like, Renee?
What? They were so great about it. They were big to shake their head and make sure that it wasn't a sign in which somebody wouldn't need it. It was off a residential area. And they're like, okay. But for the most part, they were good about just shaking their head and being like, all right, that's fine. I think knowing that this is as bad as it gets, we're probably okay.
Because it wasn't a sign that you stole that was like hospital next exit.
Right, exactly. Or a stop sign at a major intersection.
Yeah.
But they were like, all right, yeah, no, that's fine.
Stole a sign from your own community to represent the street sign of Broadway in New York.
Right. And that's then fabulous. Promptly took that to college with me just so that everybody would know, uh-oh, we're working with a real rebel here. This is, somebody's about to change their identity.
Right.
And we know because she's stolen a sign that says Broadway.
That's right.
She's really not one to be messed with.
I agree. It's great because it almost, I mean, again, I'm leaning towards the softest, most vanilla side of musicals, which we have established not every musical is by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
But in the softer, cliche, like more vanilla version of the musical theater world, that is the most rebellious thing that that character does.
Like, right.
The villain, exactly. The villain in the musical steals a yeah. sign and everyone's like, whoa.
Right. It's, oh boy, oh my. But yeah, I definitely, if I had to do it over again, I would have loved to try sports or to get into like more of a, you know, student council or anything else that would have sort of broadened my horizons a little bit. But at the time, it just felt so comforting. And I've always had a bit of a like perfectionist, maybe just a dash of OCD personality. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't move on until I had learned everything there was to know.
Right.
And that took me all 4 years.
You were very, you basically had a job while you were right. being a student, and your job was the
yeah.
to be a historian of all musicals.
Right, right. But yeah, it's interesting now that that has taken me. So I pursued it. I went to school for it and I got as far as off-Broadway. And then when I got to New York, there was a little bit of a identity crisis because I was met with, I have the natural talent to work my ass off, make enough connections, and maybe get into the chorus of an off-Broadway show. But to hear, you know, the vocal pyrotechnics of the girls who are playing Elphaba on Wicked, I just don't have those chops.
Right.
I'm good, but as far as singing or dancing at that level, maybe I could have worked to get there, but
right.
I was just burned out and I was tired. And then I also had this like slap in the face of, because at the time I was doing the exact same show every single night, and I was coming to terms with the reality of like, oh, I hate this. I hate yeah. doing the exact same thing every single night where you can't stray from it.
Yeah.
So my relationship now with musical theater is I'm a little mad at it. I'm a little mad that it was this thing that I so desperately wanted. According to me, I didn't
right.
fully get there. And it kind of robbed me of, you know, learning about other things and the world for the first 25 years of my life.
Yeah. Fuck that.
If that makes sense.
Fuck you, musical theater. Totally kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Renee Colbert.
I'm Alexis Preston.
And we're the hosts of the smash hit podcast, Can I Pet Your Dog? Now, Alexis.
Yes.
We got big news.
Uh-oh.
Since last we did a promo, our dogs have become famous.
World famous.
World, like,
stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Second big news.
Mm-hmm.
The reviews are in.
Mm-hmm.
Take yourself to Apple Podcasts. You know what you're going to hear? We're happy.
It's true.
We're a delight, a great distraction from the world.
I like that part a lot.
So if that's what you guys are looking for, mm-hmm. you got to check out our show. But what else can they expect?
We've got dog tech, dog news, celebrities with their dogs, all dog things.
All the dog things. So if that interests you, well, get yourself on over to Maximum Fun every Tuesday.
We're going to go right into the smash game with our first category.
Right.
Our
yes,
first
please.
Category
yes,
is
please.
Three careers you feel you would loathe that we're going Ooh. To give you the opportunity to fall in love with. Chef is the first.
Chef.
School teacher.
Great.
I think is the second. And then what else do I just hate? What would be like a numbers thing? What's the job that deals
like
with numbers
like an accountant or like you work
Let's
for the IRS?
Yes. Right. I like to
work for the IRS.
You're an auditor.
IRS. Ah, IRS auditor. This is wonderful. Okay. Now I want you to think of three musicals that have never been done before. This is very off the cuff, I recognize, and I'm okay. asking you, but like, imagine three topics for musicals that would be like somehow satisfying for you on some level to where it would almost give you a different relationship. This is not something you have to do every night or anything like that, but it's like,
right,
if you create these sort of like, oh weird, I didn't know there would ever be a musical about that. Three.
I love this. Okay, let's go with what I generally, I mean, we got to call it out, dogs.
Yes, indeed.
Something about dogs, of course. I love greeting cards still.
Oh my God, I love this.
So probably a musical about greeting cards.
Oh, wonderful.
And now we're just using visual cues. Let's go for refrigerator magnets. What? But like fun ones. Not like dumb, like fun refrigerator magnets.
Great.
Our next options were books on shelves and framed photos.
Yeah, it's going to get really sad if you're like, just a chair, right. Things you sit in. Like, oh no, this is really backfired on me.
All right.
Really backfired on me. You've managed to give me three things that seem still doable as like cute and quirky musicals.
We can talk about that.
Let's do three places in the world, whether you've been there or not, that you would like to, we're going to give you just sort of some kind of vacation home.
Ooh. Okay. Have not been there, but Bora Bora.
Great.
Love a national park, so Yellowstone National Park.
Great.
And in the world. Somewhere, and I may need your help with the actual city, but mm-hmm. somewhere where I could go on safari in South Africa.
Oh, sure.
What would that city be?
I mean, I've never been to South Africa, so I'm just going to say the obvious things like Johannesburg, but...
Perfect.
Okay, I'm going to say Johannesburg.
We'll call it that. And then, listen, I'll travel a bit to get to that safari.
Great.
If we need be. Good, exactly. It's going to get me closer than I am right now. That'll be fine.
That's right. It's significantly closer. Significantly closer. Right. Okay. Let's see. I mean, I definitely want to incorporate some dog stuff more for all our sakes. For all our sakes.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm sort of thinking like some sort of activity that it doesn't make any kind of real life sense to be able to do with your dog, but that in this alternate universe, we're creating this sort of magical opportunity where there are three activities as absurd as you want,
right,
that you would be like, you know what? Yeah, I want my buddy with me for that. Somehow it works.
I love this. I love theme parks. So obviously riding roller coasters.
Great.
If he could just join me on that, that would be great. Things to do with my dog that aren't traditional. What could we to do? This goes back to the accountant thing, but if he could tutor me on my taxes.
Great.
Like if you could just have like boring stuff to have a dog there for to make it a little bit better.
Yeah.
What else is normally unpleasant, but a dog would make it a bit better?
I mean, it's almost anything kind of sterile or clinical, you know, mm-hmm. there's something to be said for like, if I had to go like, honestly, like when I was younger, if I had to go get my blood drawn, but there was like a puppy there to distract me, that would have been 1,000 times better. Like it just would have changed everything. It would have changed everything.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly. Yes. It's so true. Well, gosh, now I want to copy you. Now I want to take...
That's not copying. That's two friends talking. That's just two friends talking ideas. That's
just two friends talking and one giving the other the answer, which is a dog at a dentist office. Yes, please. That's what I would like.
Fantastic. Okay. Next category, let's do... Let's do three. Oh God, I'll just do the foods. I gotta get into the foods because I haven't.
You got it. We haven't eaten. Let's get in there.
Somehow I haven't eaten yet, even though I was up at 6:30. Let's do three foods. And by the way, if this is like, I hate to use the word triggering, but also if it's like, I don't want to like go into the world of food. That's also.
Oh no. Beyond, we absolutely. You know,
I just want to respect that. Like, I don't want to ask a heroin addict like three places you'd like to shoot up, and it is not the same. For many points that we've already covered.
Right.
But, you know, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yes. No, to the point where I am just like, oh, right, that was me. When I think back to high school, I was just like, well, hold on. I'm feeling like this weird thing in my chest. I'm like, oh, right, that eating disorder. Okay. Yeah. But it's such at the back of my mind. So, yes, I love these are my favorite foods.
These are foods that you, for whatever reason, can't eat. You probably wouldn't eat in perpetuity either because maybe it's harmful to the environment or you have an allergy now or, you know, you wish you could sort of binge on it, but you know too well how sick you feel afterwards. This sort of removes all of that, and it just becomes this like fantasy land of like, nope, you can just, there's just no ramifications.
Couldn't do it. Okay. These are all going to be very, I have a, my friends call it a baby mouth, which means just not refined taste at all. Just if a 3-year-old would eat it, then maybe Renee will like it. Things that I wish I had done better growing up in my formative years. Wonderful. Done something more than musical theater, developed a taste for sushi.
Oh,
but
wonderful.
We are where we are.
Yeah.
So, I
baby mouth.
Will go, it's a baby mouth. That's all.
That's great.
mashed potatoes. Obviously.
Great. You're not letting, you are certainly living up to your warning.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Right. Exactly. Applesauce and mac and cheese. No, the Sour Patch Kids only because to eat in perpetuity, you'll get injured. You're going to cut the top of your mouth.
Oh my God. It's such a specific feeling. I haven't eaten enough Sour Patch Kids in so long for that to be a thing. But it's so visceral. Like, it's just, like, I remember it as if I'm doing it now. It's just very, okay, Sour Patch Kids, what's your last one?
Sour Patch Kids, and then, gosh, isn't that funny to be like, well, gosh, what's my favorite food? I think probably ice cream.
Great. Beautiful. Okay, let's go with three fictitious characters from wherever, movies, books, musical theater, but people who are not technically real that you can pull into your reality and have like this great lifelong friendship with.
Ooh, gosh, that's so good. Been watching a lot of Better Call Saul, so Mike.
Great.
From Better Call Saul.
Sure.
Do I know that actor's name? Probably.
Yes. Unfortunately, all I can think of is
that amazing
character's
actor?
Name. I know. I've met the man.
Right.
He's so charming. Crap.
Sure. Okay. But yeah, we got him.
Yeah.
We know him. Now, listen, I'm really curbing this into, because they need to be fictional characters. Okay. So Mike from Better Call Saul. Let's do, because we have to do musical theater, I guess Elphaba. Can she make stuff happen for me?
Mm-hmm,
she cast spells. Okay.
Great.
And it's so funny how hard this is once you're put in front
oh,
of
God,
it. You're like,
I know.
Should be pretty easy for you.
It's
feel
worst.
Like you could do that. I would say Titus from Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh, okay.
He seems like fun. I'd like to be pals with him. I know he's not it's an actor, but I like those guys on my team.
No, it's great. Also, yeah, that's still living in the world of fiction to some degree.
Okay.
Okay. Next category. This is our, we got to take a foray into romance. So three people from any time period, living or dead, could be, again, people from fiction, dogs. I don't care. Sky's the limit. There's no bad answer. Well, I mean, maybe there might be a couple bad answers, but.
I love this so much. Okay. Romance, but in a like don't worry about it way. Obama, I love him so much.
Great.
He's so great. Let's see who else. Listen, again, Better Call Saul. I don't know the character's name. I don't know the actor's name, but there's a character in there who's in the cartel and he's trying to protect his dad and he can't get out. That boy is handsome. He is very good looking.
Oh yeah. I haven't watched this last season, so I don't know if it's like, but it's not like Nacho or anyone, right? It's not, okay, got it.
Think so. But yeah, Cartel Guy?
Cartel Guy.
Could we do it that way?
Okay. Yes, Cartel Guy.
And then who else romance-wise could we be looking for? And does it need to be, like, obviously it's famous people so that we all can have the same...
Oh, I don't mind. No, if you're, like, this guy who lived down the street from me when I was a kid. Like,
okay.
I don't... Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I've got a new neighbor with a dog named Jack. I've not met his name, but Jack's dad is.
Jack's dad.
Real nice.
Love it. I absolutely love it. Rip from the headlines, y'all.
Right.
Okay, great. Great. You know what? I'm going to take that and I'm going to spin it into our final category. I want you to give me three headlines that would be like on the front page of a newspaper about you in this fictional universe that you would like. It would be like, yes, I would want a headline to read this about me having achieved something or having had something happen to me, proving something, like Renee Colvert proves that dogs can speak English, like anything. Three headlines from your fictitious future.
Oh my gosh, I love this so much. Well, let's be funny with the first one. Renee Colvert remembers the name of any actor. Just any of them would be great. That one, I feel like that would make front page news.
Great.
Renee Colvert figures out how to text your dog. I feel like that's a thing that I want on a daily basis when I am out and about.
Great.
And I just want to text him. I'm on my way home.
Great.
And then this is a little silly, but also, God, wouldn't it be great? What I would give Renee Colvert, consistently confident. Oh. Imagine. What a world. What a world that would be.
And I relate. Okay. Pick a number between 1 and 7.
3.
Okay. I'm going to calculate this stuff. I found that it's usually easier to sync if we don't both stop and then come back. So either Wonderful Julian at Maximum Fun, Hi, We Love You, Julian, can edit out any awkward silence that I bring to the table. But it may be that while you are telling people, if they don't already know, if they're not already fans, which most of them probably are, but why don't you tell people where they can find your various and sundry projects if they would like?
You got it. So I have a podcast on the aforementioned wonderful network, Maximum Fun. It's called Can I Pet Your Dog? And it's about exactly what you think a podcast called Can I Pet Your Dog is about, for unapologetic dog lovers. We talk about my dog, Tugboat. We talk about my co-host, dog, Crumb. Her name is Alexis. And it's just nice. It's a nice little escape. I wouldn't say that it's the podcast for intellectuals, but it's a good place to just go and kind of enjoy the world of dogs for a little bit. And then I also am a panelist for a show called Allison Rosen Is Your New Best Friend, which is just a great show that's been around for a really long time.
We do love our Allison Rosen.
Isn't she the best? She's so great. So check out that show. Even whether I'm on it or I'm not, go check that out. And yeah, that's kind of it. On social media, I'm Renee S. Colvert, and my dog is more famous than I'll ever hope to be. He is Tugboat the Fluffy Pit on Instagram. So if you want to see his little antics, you can go check out what Tugboat's
up
to.
He is much beloved. It is certainly true. Okay, wonderful. That timed out absolutely perfectly. I do have your mass future all squared away.
I can't wait.
I am excited. Ooh, yeah, I'm pleased about all of this.
Wonderful.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on, you know what? I'm just going to start with this one. You've got this pal. It's Titus from Kimmy Schmidt.
Ah, come on.
So that's just like one kind of fun element of your life as we start to kind of build this future for you.
Terrific.
You have, if it seems like I'm trying to figure out what to tell you next, it's because I suddenly realized I couldn't read my own chicken scratch in one particular
thing. Oh, sure. Yeah, happens to me daily.
Yeah, so big deal trying to figure that out, Janet. Okay. I also want to congratulate you on your vacation home in Johannesburg.
Oh, awesome.
I'm excited for all the various and wonderful safaris that you can embark upon very conveniently because they're so close by. You are also a fantastic chef. Which I think was maybe the thing that was the first thing you listed is what has got us into the category. And it's a thing that I feel like you have the most hope of, like, I would enjoy it if I were very skilled.
Right.
So we're handing you those skills and you're fabulous.
I feel good.
I know
about
you actually started a whole ice cream chain in Johannesburg. Everyone knows you as the woman who can eat as much ice cream as she wants forever with zero ramifications. I can't think of a better person than a chef with those qualifications to have this much adored ice cream. So I can't wait to taste it.
Truly a dream.
Also, you've just had no issues with any of the stuff that you brought into the world because you are consistently confident, as I read in the Johannesburg Daily very recently. Great work on that. Great work on that.
Thank you so much.
And it was through your advent. I should say you have a house in Johannesburg, by the way. You did not get in a mansion, apartment, or shack. You got a house.
Okay. You know what? That's fair. That's reasonable.
Yeah, you know what? Listen, I think that's the ideal outcome for me. You just completely changed. You turned the whole world of dentistry on its ear when it was discovered that having dogs in dentist's office was perfectly hygienic. And great. That it drastically changed everyone's relationship with going to the dentist. And because perfect. That was so sort of earth moving, you created this amazing musical about it. So you have this musical about dogs, but the sort of the side part that we didn't realize when we were first starting this category is that it's about dogs being at dentist's office, because I feel like that would be a good addition to the musical.
That makes sense.
Yes. And you are sharing all of this with the most likely real life outcome of the three people you listed, which is Jack's dad. So you better get small talking.
I'm gonna go tell him right now.
Like, somebody needs a cup of sugar.
Big news.
Yeah,
It's a big day for you, Mister.
But tell him at a very good distance. Like, I would say 10 to 12 feet.
Oh, sure. Yes. Right.
From you would be like, street, I look even more life size when I'm a little closer.
Everything you could dream.
Yeah. Everything.
Perfect.
So that is your wonderful MASH outcome, Renee.
Thank you. Over the moon about every one of those.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad. What remains to be said is merely thank you so much for doing the podcast. I'm so glad that we were able to make it happen. I've been looking forward to it ever since I did your podcast, which I did like a year ago when I very first had Jasper. We had just adopted him. And
yes. And it remains one of the best interviews we've ever had. This feels so stupid to say to somebody who's so good, but you are just the greatest at podcasting, whether you're hosting or whether you're guesting. JV's a home run. It's a real dream to have you on a show or to be on your show. Thank you so much.
Oh, good heavens. Here I thought you were going to be like, and it sounds like Jasper's just as great as he ever was, and it turned out to be compliment to me instead.
No, Jasper is pretty great.
And I'm going to rub his nose in it. That little jerk.
You should.
Oh. I always hesitate because whenever I post stuff of him, I always think to myself, like, am I, like, does anyone care about this? Like, is it as funny as I think it is? Because it's just hard to know with dogs. But I do feel a level of confidence with him that, you know, I'm sort of leaning into.
Right. Welcome to my world on a daily basis.
Right?
I'm like, does anybody care? And then ultimately, every day, I decide, well, I do. Yeah. So there you go.
Listen, it's done very well for you and Tugboat. So I consider you my inspiration, you both of you.
Please, always post dogs.
Well, everyone, please check out Can I Pet Your Dog if you have not. And I hope everyone continues to live each day the best that they can in what's going on. And everybody be kind to ourselves and each other. Right, Renee?
Right, exactly. Yes.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Renee. Talk to you next time on the podcast.
All right.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.